Succession number 28896, reel 9.
As far as we were concerned, was in Darling.
Blew it, reel 9. We're talking about the connection with the civilians. And did you go to the local dances and cinemas?
Well, the local dance, as far as we were concerned, was in Darlington. There would be Cooperative Hall, the Pally Day Dance in Skinnegad, the Bats Hall. So if you dropped on to a night when the dances were on, was all right. We used to come into town Tuesday and Saturday 1 week, and Monday and Sunday another week. Used to come in to get a slipper bath up the Kendrew Street. Baths used to be on there, so used to all come in on the lorries, used to drop it off outside the baths, and used to get a bath then. Fortunately, at that time, my aunt, my granny's house, they'd got a bathroom put in. So sometimes I never used to bother with the Kendrew Street. It was just across the road, Thornton Street, just go down to my aunt's and have a bath there. So if as I say, you dropped in on a night, Saturday night, was a dance night, so you'd go to a dance if you fancied it. We used to come in on the lorry, the passion lorry, passion wagon they used to call it. So drop it off in the marketplace. Used to do whatever you wanted to do, go to shopping or drinking or whatever. I didn't drink in them days. I was that intent on keeping myself fit, and I never used to drink. I didn't like the taste of beer anyway, so I never drank until quite a time after. I used to go to the dance. I used to like dancing, so I used to go to the dance. They also had a dance up at the Rolling Mills Club. We used to call it the Tin Hut. Used to be a dance up there. Summerson's. When I'm saying all these places, they're only like little dance halls as such. The Baths was a big one. The Pally was a proper dance hall. So you'd go there, and then when you come out about 10 o'clock, because the wagon went back at 8:30, and you had to be there. And if you weren't there, well, you walk back. I walked back a couple of times, but. And that was from Darlington to Middleton Tyres Camp at Kirkbank, which would be about 8 miles, I would think. So you used to always try and get back on the lorry. Or hitchhike. A few of us used to do that. I remember with lorries coming back, you'd miss the wagon, so you'd walk down through the town, down to past Bland's Garage on the corner, to Stapleton Bridge, get over the bridge and walk into Stapleton Village, and wait at the bank. There was a big bank, just a gradual incline, but it was rather big, so we used to wait at the bottom of the bank for lorries to come along. When they were coming, sometimes they would stop for you, sometimes they would just carry on. But even if they went up at I remember one time there was a tanker wagon come. It had a ladder on the back. And we were, you know, "I can't stop you," shouting, "can't stop, get on the back if you can." So there must have been about 5 or 6 of us at that time. And so as he was going up the bank, going slowly, we were getting on the ladder, first one on, right to the top, like hanging on to the ladder all the way. And when the reverse procedure, when you got to the corner, Scotch Corner, that's where he used to carry on along the main road, and he used to slow down, never stopped, slow down, we're all jumping off again, like, and then walk down to Middleton Tyres. We did that once or twice, but used to sometimes they'd stop for you, and you just pile in the back, and they'd stop outside Scotch Corner and used to make your way down Middleton Tigers over to the camp.
And were you okay for reporting as long as it was at such and such a time in the morning?
Well, most of the times, as long as they were a bit lax, the half past 10 lorry, as I used to say, they used to get you back by 11 o'clock. And there was quite a few, like, you know, they didn't, used to just go up, and used to, the guard commander be in his, with his little book, all those that were in. And, like, you'd be going in, and I'm talking, blow it, Tonto, blow it, where's George? George isn't in there. Martin! You know, shout his name in, so they're in. And then when they come, maybe on the, getting the lift in, or even marching, they used to have to just evade the, they used to know somebody had signed, shout them in anyway, so they didn't go. And just to make their way back to the hut, like, get in. I always remember one time I was on guard. This was before I got a stripe. I was on guard, and this Martin, he was a bit of a character. He was a married man. He was a bit of a character. And there was about three more, I think, that missed the lorry. And Corporal Stevenson, who was a Darlington man, he looked for all the world like Victor McLachlan. Big fella he was, wasn't he? And he knew they hadn't come in. He was on. And he, it was about, I don't know, about 2 o'clock in the morning. As it was a bit, you could see. And I was on guard this at this particular time. And George was stood with me. And you'd hear these, I think there was about three of them, coming up the drive. He didn't make no attempt to this, try and evade anybody. He'd just come and walking up the drive. I think they'd had a drink or two, like, you know. And he said, here they are. So he said, wait till they get about 100 yards away, he said, then challenge them. Halt, who goes there? And this Jody Martin said, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. George, the corporal said, advance, Snow White. And he come up. Snow White. Oh, sorry, corporal, I didn't know it was you. He said, it was the others, those were the dwarfs, you know. Anyway, they all piled in. What are you doing? He said, oh, well, we missed the lorry. And we had to walk back. So they decided, seeing they'd walk back, that was enough punishment. He never said anything, you know, but just got back and going.
Can you take me through the organisation of a transport company?
Was the HQ, a Major Campbell, he had about two or three captains, about two or three lieutenants. That was more or less the officers. There was four platoons, A, B, C and D, a workshops platoon, and the HQ, who used to attend to all the rigmarole of the officialdom in the office. There'd be only about four clerks and an NCO. There's a quartermaster stores, which was just comprised of him, a corporal and a storeman. Then there was the workshops, which would be about 10 people, fitters, electricians, joiners. And again, a couple of NCOs, a sergeant, corporal. And you get down to the platoons. Normally, there would be one of them that'd be on duty somewhere away from the camp. There was always, I think it was D platoon where they used to, their drivers were mostly deployed around ambulance places, different places, other camps as ambulance drivers. I think there was about six of them, ambulances. But they were on, you know, a driver of them was on your own. slept in the ambulance. All, the only thing you did with the, as far as Russians were concerned, you just moved in with whoever's company you were there. You were there for that purpose, to take any casualties or anything, not just with air raids, but anything that happened around the camp. If somebody hurt themselves, you took them to the hospital. And you were there maybe 3 months at a time, and you maybe swap over with somebody who fancied going it. You generally get a volunteer to go, because it was a cushy number. You slept in a bed in the back of the ambulance, but you had the old-fashioned ambulance with the tarpaulin, the canvas things down. That was the HQ of the workshops. It's D platoon. With the B and C, I was in C platoon. B and C, there would be two sections, I think, out of each, in each company, comprising of about 20 drivers. B and C used to alternate at that time with going to Stockton, staying at Stockton for 3 months, then they swap over. There was also a section of to go to North Allerton, a detail of about 8 drivers with a corporal. So within each company, there was always little details that had to go to different places and stay with them. But all in all, I would think there'd be about 300 personnel as far as drivers were concerned. There was about 4 sergeants, one for each platoon, and about the same with corporals and then lance corporals. We got this chap and I, mate of mine, we got made up acting, unpaid, local lance corporals. That was just for the, so you were just a lance corporal within the company, you weren't recognised anywhere else. You didn't get paid for your stripe. The only thing we got it for, because they wanted guard commanders, so you had to have a lance corporal at least on guard as a guard commander. So we had that, we were about unpaid for about 2 or 3 months, and now we both decided we went in see the CSM. To say, like, if we didn't think we were worthy of getting paid, we didn't want the stripe, like, it was always just doing that added duties for nothing. So he talked us round it, like, by saying that you're only allowed so many on strength, and until you were next in line to get paid, so don't worry about it, you get paid, you're being well thought of. So we stuck it out till we got paid.
And it was confirmed.
And it was confirmed on orders, then you were confirmed as a paid lance corporal. He was, I always got on well with the sergeant major.
Do you remember his name?
Yes. Pratt. P-R-A-T-T, because he used to get a few side remarks about that. Arthur Pratt. And that was another thing. Arf. One of the sergeants, he thought he was a bit of a comedian, and he used to say, make a joke about Arthur Pratt, you know, Arthur Pratt. But I was all right with him. He got, at one stage, getting away from the company, but at one stage, we got a lot of DLI, funny enough, say DLI, infantry, who had been downgraded from A1 and sent to us to train as drivers. That was when I'd got the paired stripe. We were split up. We had two driving schools. And also sent a sergeant who I did not get along with at all. He was like a senior sergeant, because I was sergeant major. He was sent up to Newcastle. Up to it, there was like HQ up at Newcastle as regimental sergeant major, and this other chap come as a sergeant major.
You remember his name?
Oh, I don't know what they called him. I wasn't with him long enough to find out, actually, because we were taking these lads out driving, and they thought it was great, like, you know, and But when the first day we started in the camp, and like I said, there were infantry, and we used to saunter along our I forget what it was, 120 to the minute or whatever, 80 to, and they come along and they were doing about 80. That, you know, the sergeant major, on parade, all of them, left turn, by the right, quick, back, and they were off down the drive, you know, and we were, oh, it was chaos, stop, halt, you know. And we had our sergeant major then, and he said, I know your different step, you'll have to get used to this one, more leisurely like, walking along. But they were alright, some of them were alright, some were dead keen, they wanted to learn to drive, some had no intention of learning to drive. So you have to sort them out. And like I say, when I went for these pebbles and whatnot, these were the lads I took out. You had about 8 in the back, you know.
And this was whilst you were at Kirkbank that this happened?
Kirkbank, yeah. And I come.
Did the, at the end of this so-called training, not only these people you mentioned, but yourself when you were learning, was there any form of final passing out test for a driver to show that you qualified?
Not as such. When I went qualified, this lad who I was with, he just said to the sergeant, oh, he's ready. So that was it. The sergeant never took us out. But when we had the driving school, I had to say to our corporal, who was in charge of the driving school, you know, said, oh, well, he's all right. He's about ready for passing out. And so he took him out. He went out. Some of them, like I said, had no intention. They were quite happy to get a job around the camp. Permanent cookhouse fatigues or something like that, you know. And some of them were too nervous to drive anywhere, you know. You'd get one. I remember one lad I was with. He was older than me, by the way. You know, they were getting sent from infantry companies. And he said, oh, I said, I'm going to get a coal wagon when I get. If I learn to drive, I'm going to get a coal wagon. That's all he wanted. He's ambitious. He got no farther than the coal wagon when he got out of the army. So he wanted to drive. And he turned out he was quite a good driver as well. And the other one, he was just going to from opposites. He was like this when he was driving along. And I said, you're all right, take your time. There's no good. And I go back and I say, he's a waste of time. Like I said, put him on fatigue somewhere. So he just hasn't got it, that's it.
The comrades that you had, the people that you were with, and do you remember any of those by name? Your pals?
Well, the going from the top to the bottom, Major Campbell, he was the OC.
What was he like?
He was a little Scotchman. Something like Captain Mannering. In his manner, he didn't see much of him because he was always there in the office, and he always come out maybe when there's a big parade on. You never see much of him. There was a Captain Gray, a Scotchman, very nice man, totally opposite to the major. And one of my friends, it's another story this, but he was his Batman driver, driving a little Ford Prefect around with him. That was Captain Gray. I can't remember the names of the other officers, except like Sergeant Major was Arthur Pratt. The Quartermaster Sergeant was Anderson. It was rumoured, we don't know. The Anderson, he was a Scotch golfer. It was rumoured he was a relation of his, either a nephew or whatever. And believe it or not, he was a 23, only 23, and he was about 20 stone. He was massive, but a very nice fella. He was massive. I did have a photograph of his storeman, who was one of my mates, and myself in his service jacket. The big service jacket, there's two of us in his service jacket. I don't know where that went to. Very nice fella he was. We used to have a... But even like that, this was the Scotch HQ that come down to Scarborough, and then the rest of them, they got split up. Some went down to Thetford, and down south. We were fortunate enough to stay with the in Scarborough, but we weren't there long before we'd gone back to Kirkmark. You see, so this is We had a couple of Davy. Sergeant we had, he was a nice bloke. Just can't think of his name, not Davy somebody. And that my big pal, there you see your big pal, one of my big pals, Bill Nicol, he was a Scotchman, come down with them, and I got very friendly with him. I went up to his house after the war to stay with him, and he come down, you know, we were very that friendly. And then the names, the lads who was on the football team like that, the Welsh lad, I just, Saunders, Cyril Saunders, Ken Clarkson, who was engaged to my sister. He was, after the war, he had the fish shop in Cockerton, Moore's Fish Shop. He used to work for him. George Fowler and Clarkson used to work for Moore's Fish Shop. And after the war, George come to work at the railway, and then he went on ambulance, driving ambulances, and from there driving hearses. So he went all the way around.
And you get very close to your friends, didn't you, the comrades?
Well, you did as far as you could, because all you did was go out with them on a night. I was close with Ken. I didn't know him before the war. And he just... My mother and father's house, Winston Street, it was very central. And so there was quite a lot to go to the pictures, to go to the pubs, go to the dance, wherever. And at that time, when the war was just started, more or less, and there were talks of paratroopers dropping all over, so we had to, when we went into town, we had to take our rifles, which we had no ammunition for, gas masks in the case, and tin hats. So you can imagine going into a picture house with a rifle and a tin hat on, and moving along the queue. So it more or less unofficial, our front room in Winston Street, which wasn't used for anything, births, deaths and marriages sort of thing, it was like an armory. Everybody used to come and knock on the door. Mrs. Blewett, yeah. Is it all right if I leave me right now? She said, oh, yeah, put it in the front room. So, he said, oh, yeah. In the front room it went. So, and then on the night, knock on the door again, when Mr. Blue, just come for my rifle. We just like open house, rifles and tin hats and gas masks. They were all just in the front room, planked there. She used to move the furniture about. No, everybody used to use them. No officers, of course, but the others would think nothing of it.
So your family became well known. Was there a padre attached to your unit? You didn't have that?
No, we never saw one, no. There may be one attached to HQ, which was up at...
I presume your MO, medical officer, would be at the higher unit.
Yeah, it was away from us. Never used to see anybody. I can tell you a little story about not an MO, well, not our medical officer, but I don't know whether it comes into it now or later.
We can do it later if it comes in later, because we'll be talking about medical situation.
Friends.
Later on.
Yeah. Well, this Dennis Winter, he was a friend.
Were any of the officers and NCOs unpopular?
Yes. This was a Scotch sergeant was very unpopular. I can't remember his name anyway. There was one who was the major's nephew, and we always said he only got his stripes on account of that, and he was only a young bloke. I can't remember his name. He was supposed to be in charge of our platoon, but he never seemed to be there working as NCO. He was always hanging around the office, you know. Only when he come out and tried to be a bit officious, and then
I would say, what way were they unpopular? Why were they disliked?
Well, we used to think if you give me something to do that was dirty or anything like that, we used to think, have the idea he was only trying to take it out of you because he didn't like you personally. I don't think he liked me personally because I was captain of the football team. Not that I was a great footballer, but the CSM seemed to think that I was better for the job than a few more. And there was one officer on the team, a sergeant, a corporal, and two lance corporals. I think, again, he maybe give me the stripe on account of the football, I don't know. But I always got on with it. And I think he used to think, because I had the sergeant major's ear, he didn't like that much.